Okay, I was going to talk about this, deformations of ADS4 solutions, which is work that I did with Sangmin Lee, Tony Mateus, and Dan Waldron, and appeared here. And I was going to tell you about starting with a solution of D equals 11 supergravity of this form, where G4 is just a 4, G4 is the volume form on ADS4, and then a procedure, which was discussed by Luna and Maldacena, producing beta deformations of these solutions. So you take particular classes of solutions, and then there's a well-defined generating procedure to get ADS4 warped compactification X7, and then G4 is this volume form plus a 4 form on X7. But I decided not to. So, so what I want to talk about is classifying SUSY ADS5 solutions of QB supergravity. And this is work that I'm doing with Dario Martelli at CERN and James Fox at Harvard and Dan Waldron at Imperial. And the reason I was going to talk about this and not this is that this is work in progress. And it's a bit technical. That's two reasons not to do this, but then I thought it's two reasons to do it. So let me give you a flavor of what we're up to. It's, as you see, the final results do get a bit technical, but nevertheless. Okay, so in 2B, there's been a lot of discussion, at least in some of the parallel sessions, about ADS5 cos X5 Sasaki-Einstein solutions, where the only fluxes is the self-dual 5 form, and we have a direct product of ADS5 with a Sasaki-Einstein space. And Sasaki-Einstein space, I think everyone knows by now, but in case people don't, the exact definition of Sasaki-Einstein can be given as the cone over the Sasaki-Einstein space is a Calabi-Yau threefold. There's nothing more or less to the definition of Sasaki-Einstein than that. So these geometries, of course, arise by taking some D3 brains. So the other point about this, of course, is this is a cone. So there's a singularity. Well, there's a cone like this. The base of the cone is the Sasaki-Einstein space, and at the apex of the cone, unless the Sasaki-Einstein space is around the phi sphere, we have a singularity. You put D3 brains at the apex of that singularity, look for the near horizon geometry, and you get this. So these are dual to the conformal field theories sitting on these D3 brains. Well, the question we want to look at is, so this is a class of 2B solutions, that we want to analyze the most general. So we want to look at the most general QB solutions with an ADS5 factor and all the fluxes are non-zero. So in this case, only the 5 forms non-zero, but we want to switch on the 3 forms and the axion and dilaton. Okay, before I tell you about the results, let me tell you, just remind you what we did what results we got for a similar problem. So for D equals 11 supergravity, we played this same game some time ago, and we asked what the most general geometry of the form the metric of the form that, so it's the most general warped product of ADS5 with a 6 manifold. So lambda is just a scalar function on M6, and the 4 form is a non-zero 4 form on M6, and it can be, to begin with, completely general. So the techniques which I'll just describe a little bit later, or just sketch a little bit later, we applied to this case, and we did this classification. And what did we get? Well, I'm not going to give you the precise statement here, but we got some general conditions on geometries. So the point is that I asked for those types of geometries that are supersymmetric. So we get some general conditions on the geometry. On the metric, the scalar function and the 4 form on the 6 manifold. And just to give you a flavor of what those are, or were, you get a 1 parameter family of Kähler metrics on M6. You get a Killing vector and a 1 parameter family of Kähler metrics on M6, but they satisfy some more conditions, which I don't want to tell you in detail. But that was the first step. And the second step in this particular case is that we made an additional assumption on the geometry, which is very natural, and we assume that the 6 manifold is actually complex. So in general, supersymmetry doesn't imply that it's a complex manifold, but we assumed it's complex, and we also assumed it's compact, which for ADS CFT applications is good, because we want that to be compact, otherwise we'll get we won't get a good central charge. So this is n equals 1 and d equals 4.
You say the general supersymmetric solution is ADS5 plus something? What about ADS4 plus?
Sorry, this is the most general, the general geometry with an ADS5 factor. So I just want to get the most general way to get a conformal field theory, supersymmetric conformal field theory from 11 dimensions. I can just answer that in a moment. Okay, but this case, if we assume that M6 is complex, which is just an assumption completely independent of supersymmetry, and that it's compact, then what was fantastic is that you could work out the general, well, you could classify all the solutions. And the topology of all the solutions were all S2 bundles over a base manifold B, four-dimensional base manifold B. And this B could either be Kähler Einstein with positive curvature. And in four dimensions, Kähler Einstein with positive curvature, don't know exactly what that means, it's exactly equivalent to this list. Product of two spheres, CP2, or Dolpetzos, which are CP2 blown up at K points, with K between 3 and 8. So it could either be one of those, or it could be a product. And the product, if we take S2 cross T2, S2 cross S2, or S2 cross H2. This one is a more general one of this, because you can have the radii being different. H2 is the hyperbolic point. It's not compact, but there's a solution, there's at least one solution in this class where the Killing spinners are independent of the coordinates of H2, and you can then take a discrete quotient of that, infinitely many in that case. But the general class, we don't know. It's one solution you can do that. The general solution in this class, I don't know if you can do that. But I put it in the list because at least there's some examples.
So then M6 is it?
It's non-compact there, but if there's at least some examples of that form, and this is just some arbitrary Riemann surface, and then it's compact. Okay, so that's nice. And And the metric, so the topology is this, and the metric... Say that again, sorry? No. In the complex case, actually, yeah, I'm not sure. I think it's very unlikely that anything ever proves. There's one solution. In fact, there was only a couple of solutions known. So one was Meldacena and Nunez with n equals 1 supersymmetry, which in fact is this solution I just mentioned. And the other one is Meldacena and Nunez n equals 2 supersymmetry. And that's definitely not in the complex class. That's the reason why I think it's unlikely. Okay, so that's the topology. And the metric is completely explicit, provided that the metric on B is explicit. So obviously in this case, 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 it's all completely explicit. And in this case, it's explicit up to the metric on these spaces, which is not known. Okay, so that is a list of geometries, which it will be nice to say something about the field theory, whoever asked that question. And nothing's known about that, but I'm hopeful that some progress can be made on that. For example, one could work out central charges of these and so on. But let me just mention this one example of this list. That's this T2 factor. So if we dimensionally reduce on an S1, we get a 2A solution, and it turns out to be regular. And then if we T-dualize on the other S1, we get a 2B solution. And when the dust settles, you find that you have this is in fact how we discovered these YPQ Sasaki-Einstein metrics. So the Sasaki-Einstein metrics arise as a special case of this list of classified solutions of M-theory that has the T2 factor. So
you get all the PQs?
Yeah, you get all the PQs.
The 3-dimensional solution that gives rise
to, so it's a good point. So the PQs... P and Q are arbitrary, some integers that they're just some integers with P greater than Q and PQ being relatively prime. So these are the spaces that people have been discussing in the workshop in various contexts. But the discreteness here comes from making sure that the flux, the four-form flux, is globally well-defined. So these solutions depend on a constant parameter, but if you want to make sure that the four-form flux is globally defined, it will put a discrete condition on that, which exactly corresponds to this discrete condition here.
It becomes a bit, and it goes down to type 2, and then it becomes metric on people, I guess.
Yeah, you have a bunch of different fluxes in the 2A case. But there's one thing that's interesting here. This is meant to be motivation, but I just wanted to mention this one. I mean, just to tell people who don't know where these Sasaki-Einstein metrics came from, this is where they came from. And the second thing is that it seems interesting to me that this is, a lot's known about the field theory by taking this 2B picture, but the geometry is completely regular in 11 dimensions, which is a bit strange. There's an M theory description of the same quantum field theory, which we know nothing about. I guess it's S2 cross T2, because it's an S2 bundle over S2 cross T2, and the T2 doesn't have any. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's S2 cross S2 cross T2. The trivial one, but S2 bundle. Okay, let me not, people can ask about this more, but the point was, in this program is that there's a very general kind of machine to do this step, and that's what we can do in this 2B case, and I'll give you some flavor of this. And in this case, we made some very natural geometrical assumption on the geometry, and then we got this nice story. So that was the motivation. Since it works so nicely in 11 dimensions, could we repeat the story in 10 dimensions? So Clevenon stressor is non-compact in the radial direction. Yeah, I guess if you get out of the conformal. That's the radial direction which is growing. It's the analog of the radial direction. Oh, or it's constant. Okay, in that sense, it's growing. But the cross sections for fixed R are compact. That's enough. So everything in these geometries, everything's independent of the ADS 5, because this. The lambda is a function just of, it's a scalar function on M 6.
Oh, I see.
And the reason is I want to preserve SF14. Yeah, sorry about this. That's an important point. This is a function on here. So the whole problem boils down to a 6 manifold with a scalar and a 4 form.
Also, a question. I mean, don't you expect it to be some kind of reduction of the field theory to be a reduction of the five-frame theory?
In some sense.
Yeah. Reduced along that.
So all of these, I think, have something to do with the 0-2 field theory. Exactly. So only one case that I know where it corresponds to a fibrain wrapping a holomorphic cycle in a Calabi-Yau threefold. That's the one case where that's explicit. But all these other cases, they should have such an interpretation that it's just unknown. Good. Okay. So, don't get your hopes up too high that we're going to be a successful, well, we aren't as successful as that in the 2B case, but nevertheless. So switch to 2B. And we consider this ansatz. So let me see the coordinates x here. This is this function just on that space, so we're going to maintain all the SO42 symmetries. The 5 form is just a constant, S is a constant, times 2 delta. And the three-form flux, complex three-form flux, we allow that to be non-zero, and the axion dilaton we also take as non-zero. And these are one forms and three forms just on the space X5. So the whole problem is completely thrown onto this five-dimensional space. Five-dimensional space with a scalar field, a complex three-form, and a complex one-form. Okay, so that's the most general way in which you can get ADS5 out of 2B.
So F is in the five-form, F is a constant?
F is a constant, little f.
And then you satisfy the chain, you have this chain term.
Yeah, that satisfies the. I mean, this has to be it's a 5 form on here plus a 5 form on here, so when you take the D of it, you've got no more.
But then that says something about U3.
I mean, this
restricting then the deform to be such that it doesn't contribute to the.
Worry about the F where J.
Right. So DF5 should be H3, which DA. So if that is zero, then you're saying.
No, but this is the most general way you can write down a 5 form, maintaining the SO42 symmetry.
So the function F might have a source. I mean,
so F.
Well, ignoring, I mean, sources will show up in the detail.
So the equation which F satisfies is not box on F is equal to 0, it's just box on F is equal to some stuff.
I mean, you're probably thinking about the case when this is Minkowski space, and then things could be a function of R.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Right, but but I'm just thinking the most general answer.
Can't agree with your G. Can't agree with your G being non-zero. I agree.
Yeah. So then it's an equation for F. That is one for that equation.
Yeah.
Okay. So the logic is this is the most general answer that's consistent with SO42 symmetry, and then we just put it into the Bianchi identities of the equations of motion, and see what we get. And demanding that this is closed gives F as constant. Hi, John.
How come one formula has an E equal to I phi and the other formula has an E equal to phi?
Why this and this?
Yeah.
Have I written that down incorrectly? Yeah, that's right. Tau is, yeah, sorry, I didn't define tau. Tau is e to the minus phi. That's.
Maybe it's a different phi.
I'm not sure what the problem is. I mean, is there an obviously a problem?
Is the phi in the formula for G the dilaton?
Yes. And this is the dilaton, this is the dilaton. And I believe it's from your paper.
Why is there an I in the exponent? Yeah.
Sorry. Sorry, I missed that. I was taking it to be the factor of 2 that you were in. Oh, sorry. Quite right. Sorry. Okay, so I think we're set. No one. Okay, so the problem is we take this and we want this to have supersymmetry, so it's going to satisfy the generalized killing spinner equations. And we also want it to solve all the Bianchi identities and all the equations of motion. So Einstein's equations and E star G equals dot 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 big mess. Okay. Well, the first step, or the next step in the program, so that's just the answer, that's straightforward, is then look at the most general way in which supersymmetry could be realized. And in V equals 10, we have two Majorana Weyl spinners, spin 9-1. And just roughly speaking, there's a little bit more to it than this, but roughly speaking, the most general way you can write this is so psi is spin 4-1. The most general ansatz for a spin 9-1 spinner decomposed into spin 4-1 cross spin 5 is of this form. And we demand that the spin 4-1 spinner satisfies this killing spinner equation here, which ensures that we have n equals 1 supersymmetry in the ADS5 space. Okay. So the conditions then boil down to conditions on these spinners. And I'm just going to sketch out what one gets. Just to give you some flavor. One. So there's two differential conditions. So the killing spinners in 10 dimensions, once you take this most general ansatz, turn into some differential conditions on the two spinners psi 1 and psi 2. And then you get some algebraic conditions, which are things like and then finally, I won't write it down, but there's another kind of condition which looks like okay.
Sorry, what's M in the first formula? Second term of the first formula.
Yeah, I should have. I was hoping I've said M equals one. It was the radius of the ADS space, the inverse radius of the ADS space. Okay, so the point is, so this now is the problem, is to try and understand the most general geometry that emits spinners, two spinners, spin phi spinners, psi 1 and psi 2, satisfying these equations which I've just sketched out, and in addition still satisfy the equations of motion.
Yes, in the algebraic conditions, that derivative is just acting on delta.
It's just acting on delta, exactly. Because it's not a derivative acting on the spinner itself. Okay, so that's a problem. Well, if anyone's been following our papers over a couple of years, we've developed our old techniques really, but some techniques to analyze this problem. And before I analyze, let me make the comment. So comment, if psi 1 equals 0, and in fact more generally, if psi 1 is linearly dependent on psi 2, you can also, or you can show that one of them must be 0. If psi 1 equals 0, by analyzing these equations, you can show that you're led back to the Sasaki-Einstein case. And in fact, if psi 1 is linearly dependent on psi 2, you similarly get back to the Sasaki-Einstein case. So the more general case when you have these fluxes is all to do with having two spinners. And just to reiterate, the fact that we have two spinners is still consistent with having n equals 1 supersymmetry in four dimensions. Because the n equals 1 supersymmetry, in four dimensions. This is implying the n equals 1 supersymmetry. We have one ADS5 killing spinner, but the 10-dimensional spinners is built out of two spinners. So the Sasaki-Einstein case, you build it out of one. In the general case, you build it out of two, but still consistent with n equals one supersymmetry. Okay, so we analyze using D-structure techniques, and I'm not going to tell you about exactly what I mean by that, but in practice, we just construct all the bilinears out of psi 1 and psi 2, and then just analyze their differential and algebraic conditions and the way they're related to all the fluxes by analyzing these equations. So it's a completely straightforward thing to do, but it's conceptually, but it's technically very involved. The novel thing about this case, and so actually G structures, if we know about them, are not particularly useful, is that psi 1 and psi 2 form a basis for spinners in spin phi. So they span the vector space that spin phi spinners live in.
There's representations for
you. Yeah, but there's also the conjugate spinners. These are complex. Psi 1, psi 2, psi 1, psi 2, yeah. So what this means in terms of G structures is they give you an identity structure. And an identity structure is just a canonical frame, orthonormal frame. So the bilinears. There's more bilinears than this, but when the dust settles, these are the ones that one needs to focus on. And I won't give you the exact definitions, but you get a real scalar, a complex scalar, two complex vectors, and a real vector. This is acting on a complex four-dimensional vector space. So if I give you four spinners, so I'm inside two in the complex conjugates. Not sure what you mean. When all I'm doing is just concretely what I'm doing is just taking these spinners and constructing all these bilinears. And the fact that these form a basis for spin 5, there's no, the isotropy group, another way of saying it, the isotropy group for these two spinners is the identity. I give you two spinners and I say, which spin 5 transformations leave it invariant? The answer is the identity. And the manifestation of that identity is that I can build five vectors out of these spinners, which gives me a canonical orthonormal frame.
If psi 2 is equal to 0, what is the
identity? Oh, if psi 2 is equal to 0. Then you get SE2. So this identity structure, so you wouldn't get as many bilinears as this. And instead of all this data, SU2 in D equals 5, roughly speaking, would be a vector, which brings you from 5 dimensions to 4. And then in the 4-dimensional space, you get a 2 form. So you get 2 forms. For experts in this area, everything I'm talking about G structures, like here, it's a local statement. And an interesting question is, what is the global statement?
It could degenerate,
exactly. Exactly. So, yeah, there's two games going on. One is, if you want to get exact solutions, do everything locally, try and solve the differential equations, and then that's great, then look at the global properties then. Another one is, once you have the general conditions for what the supersymmetric geometries are, try and make that more precise so we can develop intuition for what that means in itself, and that would mean being more precise about these global issues.
Sorry,
I should have mentioned that. So you take an arbitrary, so these are just gamma matrices with n-anti-symmetric indices, and take the conjugate spinners, and you consider all the, there's a lot of them, but that's all you do.
So there should be 20 objects, right? 4 times 5 over 2?
That sounds right, yeah.
I only count 18.
Yeah, so 2 points. One is that there's there's two more scalars which we've set equal to 0, and there's some additional ones which can be constructed out of these ones. No, I guess I take that back. I guess it must be that the other ones are equal to 0. But this, yeah. It's not a good, I mean, there's a better answer to your question, but this is the complete set and the dust set.
What the composition is used of the vector is number 1?
So this is it just in five-dimensional, as a five-dimensional manifold of vectors. So I just mean that there's a single gamma matrix. Okay, so when I said identity structure, concretely what I mean is you take these guys, and in fact the metric now can be written down as, and it's not particularly nice, but I'm going to write it down anyway. Because this is the answer, well, as we understand it. Hopefully we can get some more insight. Okay. Oh, and n. So out of these bilinears, we construct these scalars, these complex vectors, this real vector. The metric takes this canonical form. So you can always construct the most general five-dimensional metric out of bilinears of the general supersymmetric solution, and it takes that form. And if you work, well, the free-form flux can be written in terms of this data. In fact, it can be written in terms of, should be more precise, it can be written in terms of the bilinears, which I've just written the metric in terms of, plus it also depends on the axiom dilaton and the warp factor. There's a condition on P, which I won't write down, and there's the constant F, which is related to the warp factor and one of the bilinears, like this. Okay. And then, so this is the answer I'm putting up here. The most general ADS-5 geometry, type 2B string theory, all flux is equal, non-equal, can always be expressed in this form, and there's the bilinears satisfy some differential conditions. So the D of the S, the scalar S, with this warp factor is related to the complex vector like this.
Sorry, what was
which one?
In the equation.
Oh, sorry, it's comma. It's just the axion dilaton. Obviously the details don't matter too much. Okay, we're almost there. Okay. So the general metric and flux can be written down that way. With the bilinears, SK, the bilinears I wrote down satisfy these differential constraints. So there's a derivative on the S is K. A derivative on this complex vector K3 will give a 2 form, which is related to the fluxes, the dual of the 3 form, and another 2 form constructed out of all the bilinears. And then this one is related to another 2 form. So why did I write this up? Well, it is the answer. This is the answer. So,
question, is it possible from this general answer to go back to the Sasagian case and show that these are...
No, well, if you think about the statement, so this, if you start with this guy, that means that you, to recover the Sasaki-Einstein case, some of these bilinears are going to be zero. So it's going to be some degenerate limit. So you can recover it as some scaling limit. I'll come back to that point maybe Well, no, yeah, that's the answer. So the reason for putting this off is, I guess one point is an advertisement that this has been done. But it's, I think this is, and I'm sure it could be developed a little further, this is the most general way in which you can get a conformal field theory, supersymmetric conformal field theory out of 2B. Now, if we think that four-dimensional superconformal field theories are an interesting class of objects, which we do, then this is an interesting class of geometry. That's I think the main message of a main message of the talk.
I guess you have to get to the global properties to see.
Exactly. So you could that would be one thing you could try and do. Try and linearize these equations and see what sort of modified space. But making more precise the global properties is probably what makes sense. I mean, what I think would be most nice is existence theorem. So just like Calabi-Yau, we don't construct explicit Calabi-Yau metrics, but if we know existence proofs given some topological data, then that would be nice. Well, we know there are special cases, but the general theory we know nothing about. So this was, yeah. So that's the main thing. Where's the eraser? Okay.
So we have one brain charge.
Yes, yeah, so you could have 7 brain charge, NS5 brain charge, D5 brain charge.
Are there examples now that are not the X-side?
Yes, there are. But I'll come back to that. Maybe. Right. Yeah, that's always possible. Okay, if you've probably forgotten, but at the beginning of the talk I gave you the model of the 11-dimensional story. And this was what I've just written down or sketched out for you is the bit I didn't write down. That was the general classification in 11 dimensions. Something analogous to this, much simpler. So that's an interesting question in itself. Why was that simpler? Is it just simpler because we're a bit more used to even-dimensional geometry? So that was a 6-dimensional geometry. Or is there something deeper about type 2B geometries of this form? I don't know. If you look at this hard enough, or some of it's easy, but one thing is this was just supersymmetry. So if you might think that you need to also solve the equations of motion. But by looking at the integrability of these equations, you find that supersymmetry actually implies the equations of motion. So that's nice because it's no worse than this. K5 is one form. If you take its dual, it's a killing vector. Again, it's not obvious in what I wrote down, but it's not too difficult to show. And we knew we had to have this because it's dual to the fact that any four-dimensional superconformal field theory has a U1R symmetry.
I thought Figaro of Barrow was stressed that it's always implied.
Well, what we proved is that if you have supersymmetry, then if you have supersymmetry. And you impose the Bianchi identities and the equations of motion for the fluxes and one component, at most one component of the Einstein equation. That's the theorem. But here it's much better because, in fact, Bianchi identities, everything, all of this data comes out.
This is true always.
That's the most general statement about supersymmetry. Being content is equation of motion for the fluxes and one, at most one component of the Einstein equation. But here we have a lot more supersymmetry and a lot more structure. That's why that's.
Okay. And the Einstein equation is only necessary in the case where the killing vector comes from supersymmetry is null.
Exactly. Okay, so we have a killing vector. So, where? Up here? Well, this K5 is appearing in a couple of places. so one needs to analyze a little further. Because you have a killing vector, that basically means the 5 geometry locally at least can be split into a 1 plus 4 decomposition. So just like the Psaki-Einstein, where locally this turns into a Taylor-Einstein space, there should be some way of thinking about the four-dimensional space with some interesting geometry here. But I mean, you can do this formally, but it's just more of the stuff that I've just written up. So I don't think at the moment it's not illuminating to me at all.
Sorry, in the Psaki-Einstein case, is the U1 direction part of the Einstein 4 space, or is it?
No, so... So you can always write the Psaki-Einstein locally as... where d by d psi is the U1 coming up.
And that's the cone direction.
Sorry. The cone is dr, so this is dS squared, the Psaki-Einstein.
Right.
5 dimensions, and then the cone dimension.
Oh, this, sorry.
So there should be always a U1 isometry, right? Because of the superposition.
Exactly. So that was guaranteed before. Yeah, that was guaranteed beforehand for everything. Yeah, it's something. If you're looking for it, it's pretty straightforward to find that.
So what happens now if you take this and T-dualize it back to type K?
If you T-dualize on this U1, then you break the symmetry. So that's not such a good thing to do. So you'd want to have, in the 1 plus 4 decomposition, you'd want to take the cases and you have next to U1 symmetry in the 4.
But it was a king, the Einstein-Sasaki case, right?
Yeah, that case, so that case, we had an SP bundle over SP plus C2. And the effect of U1R is sitting in here. It was the polar coordinate of that S2, and we just played it up.
We have a global U1 isometry, and T-dualizing along it breaks supersymmetry, it doesn't preserve.
Yeah. Because the killing center depends on that coordinate. So you want the lead derivative of the spinners being buried under that isometry. That's the condition.
So the 5 linear and the spinners are all invariant, because they go into the metric, but the spinners themselves are not.
No, the bilinears also can depend on U1R direction. There can be a phase, so it's a little bit more subtle.
So it's like,
it is a
killing symmetry.
So it is
also
a
metric,
yeah.
Not a flux.
So not the bilinear.
The metric is actually the metric.
Exactly. That particular combination, those particular bilinears appearing, then it is. But each individual bilinear, some of them are invariant and some of them
are.
Exactly.
And these fluxes
and
other fields
are
also not invariant
through
this.
No, all the fluxes are invariant. Yeah.
Really,
I mean, it really is a symmetry of the solution. Yeah, available.
If you
do
analyze an spread theory, you get a human ADS 4 cross some other manifold. Can you link those solutions to the non ADS 4 cross? I mean, it's worth the ADS 4.
ADS 4 cross?
Cross some.
So
if you work the ADS 4, so if you get an ADS 5, just need to analyze the spread theory. There's some ADS 4 structure with a worst factor.
I haven't thought about that. Actually, you want to recover 11-dimensional ADS 4 solution?
Yes, ADS 4 cross.
It's possible, I don't know.
I mean, those things are possible.
Yeah, there's a lot of knowledge about those, I agree.
My
general feeling was, so this is the general class, it's specific solutions. I mean, I think in general, that would give you singular solutions if you did that. But since these are just conditions, you could play that game.
I mean, the
equation
does go through. I mean, the singularity is something you check in each frame. I mean, you can solve them in another dimension, you're getting a pro solution which might be happy.
Mm-hmm.
I have a silly question. When you do T-duality, you find the new mathematical description of the same physics, right?
Yes.
So how can one of them have supersymmetry and the other not?
The winding, yeah, so the winding is the symmetry. So if you take S5, ADS5 plus S5, might start better. Where is it? So you T-dualize, think S5 is the U1 fibration over CP2. If you T-dualize on the S1 direction, you'll get some height array geometry. But you'll break the symmetry. So the wind mode.
It's illegal T-duality, so you're not creating the same thing.
Well,
the string theory, some of the things that must really preserve supersymmetry in a full string theory. When you have to avoid,
I think it was the paper that was called supersymmetry without supersymmetry.
Because the supergravity level, you would break supersymmetry, but if you added in all the winding modes, they would somehow form together into supermodes.
You have a spin C structure on CP2, so you actually, at first you think you can't even define spinners, let alone you have supersymmetry. Well, the CP2 times S1. His point was that the B field comes, the B field comes to the rescue and gives you a spin C structure on the CP2, so he can define gravitino on the CP2 times S1.
Okay. It's not clear, it's useful. Just some observation that we are.
Actually,
I found it extremely useful. Okay. It must be then. Okay. Okay, sorry.
I'm bothered by this seven-lane charge. Sources. Do you have a basic solution in which it is non-zero?
No.
Nope.
You would never have them? Mm-hmm. Well, that would be interesting. I mean, that would be very nice if one could get a lot of this stuff. Okay. Just for the last few minutes, let me... so this was... Saved one of the projects.
Machine and
get the conditions. And the second stage is to try and stare at them and think of a suitable simplification. So in the 11-dimensional story, we just said that, well, let the 6-manifold be complex. And I can't tell you in any nice words what we did, what we imposed upon this, but there is. It's in the detail, but we can make some simplifications, and we did that. And I wish I had a name for it, but I don't. But we assumed p equals 0, x from dilaton equals 0, and we also made some other assumptions, which one of which was that there was an extra killing vector. So in addition to this U1R symmetry, there was another one, and when you put a couple of other ingredients together, you find that the solutions actually have an have a SU2 cos U1 squared symmetry. So we didn't assume this to begin with. We made much, much weaker assumptions, but nevertheless, you were led to that ansatz. So let me write it down. This is also horrible, but compared to that, it's very nice. Okay, so here's the killing direction. We've introduced coordinates d by d psi to be the killing direction. Sigma 3 is a left invariant one form on the 3-sphere. And the rest is... Okay, the sigmas, d sigma 1 is d sigma, is sigma 2 wedge sigma 3 and cyclic. So our left invariant 1 forms on the 3-sphere. And you see the metric has this U1 fiber direction, twisted by this one form here. We have a radial direction, which is called lambda. And then the left invariant 1 forms are sitting here and here. And you notice the coefficient of sigma 1 squared is the same as sigma 2 squared. So that gives you an extra symmetry. So we have SU2, because it's written in terms of sigma 1, sigma 2, and sigma 3. We have a U1 because these coefficients are the same. We can rotate sigma 1 into sigma 2. And we have another U1, which is the U1 R symmetry. Okay. And you can write down an expression for the flux in terms of these data, in terms of this data. And you notice that everything just depends on two functions, G and H. G and H are just functions of lambda. And if anyone's good at solving nonlinear ODEs, I have one for you. So, deceptively simple. Maybe it is simple. So that's the system. So they're just, H and G are just functions of lambda, and they satisfy those couple first order nonlinear ODEs. Any solution of those will give a solution, a full solution of ADS, a full solution of type 2B with an ADS5 factor with non-vanishing 3 form. So if people, well, exact solutions of that would be great. So what do we find? Well, we found one exact solution. Very simple. Lambda is the radial. The radial.
God is lambda.
So they're simple, yeah, they're simple looking, and that's a very simple solution. So we're very excited about this. But
lambda, so let's see, you're writing down the measure of a 5
manifold. Yeah. Yeah.
But there's a compact 5 manifold.
Okay. Everything I did before was local, so at this stage, these are just some local equations. In this case, the range of lambda is 0 and root 3, yeah. So lambda is defined over an interval.
Is it smooth at the
intervals? Yes, it's smooth. I'll get to the punchline. It's a known solution.
Oh.
So disappointingly, it's an already known solution. But Pilch and Warner found this particular solution of ADS, this warp compactification of ADS5, with vanishing dilaton, three-form fluxes. In fact, they found it by using gauge supergravity in five dimensions. So from a completely different route, unfortunately, we've just recovered something that was known. So a bit disappointing. But proof that we got all our signs correct. Okay, but that's just one solution to ODE. So as I said, if we could, exact solutions would be nice. But what we've done is numerically analyze it, which is unfortunately suggests that it's not too hopeful. So these all have topology S5. This has topology S5. Okay, there are solutions.
The G, the three form is.
And the three form is non-zero, yeah. But the axion and dilaton is zero. Oh, dilaton's constant.
How does the three form look like?
We might have an expression. Yeah, I can show you. It's not particularly illuminating, I think. Okay, so we analyze this numerically, and again, another excitement. There are solutions where the metric is a perfectly regular S5. So it looks like we have a one parameter family. But then the joy was short-lived because the spinners are not globally defined. So this is all local, so there's some range of the coordinates, psi, and the range of the coordinates on the three sphere, and you cook them up to get around five sphere here that's perfectly regular, but then you find that the spinners aren't globally defined. So then you say, well, okay, that's bad luck, it's not super symmetric, but we at least have solutions. And then you work a little harder, and then you find the flux is not really one of these spaces. Okay, so
can you make an analysis on the more basic solution?
Yeah, I think we probably have, this is probably all the good solutions that exist in there, but since it's just numerical, I'm not sure. So it would be nice to have exact solutions, you just quickly demonstrate that this is the story. I mean, there's just a small hope that there's something more here. Okay, so just to finish up then, where do I think this is going? Well, one place it could be going is, so this was nice, but I made this assumption in doing this that p was equal to zero. So one could relax that condition and try and find solutions. And for people who know this story well, there's a solution which interpolates between the conifold and the Pilch-Warner fixed point. And Pilch-Warner and collaborators have recently found that. So unfortunately, well, they've only recently done this, so this was one of our motivations, was to find that solution. And it seems likely that that class of solutions which they have numerically is just obtained by relaxing this condition. So one can do this using our language, but I fear that all we'll do is recover their solution.
Are you contemplating seven brands there?
Yeah, that's a good question. The axion is zero, I think. So I think probably. I'm not sure. No, the central charge is the same. 27 on 37. But nevertheless, the dilaton is non-zero from standard geometry. So, a more general question is deformations of known superconformal field theories, and Luna and Maldacena found these beta deformations of n equals 4. But these aren't the only deformations, exact marginal deformations of n equals 4, there's other ones. So there's going to be other solutions deforming away from S5. So there will definitely be in our formalisms, but whether one can extract them or not, I don't know. So one could try, as a first step, just to embed the beta deformations to see, get some more intuition for how one could find those. Other things one could do, but I think this is it would be a lot of effort, but one could demand n equals 2 supersymmetry in it instead of n equals 1. One would get a more complicated story because you have more bilinears and they would cook together in more complicated ways. However, at the end of the day, this is a more constrained system, so the geometry underlying it should be simpler once one gets to the bottom of it. And just a final comment, just to reiterate that since we have the most general geometries in ADS5 for 2B, general questions like whether A maximization or something like that is holding can be at least addressed in this formalism. So the kind of question one could ask is, take the general geometry, assume you have another killing vector, or one or more killing vectors, and see if something like A maximization, in the sense that Yao and Vitali and Sparks proved, could be manifest in a more general setting. But that's sort of a more general, open-ended question. Okay, I'll stop there.
Question. So
Yeah.
And your space is compacting. Is that on the GF5 existence of the second G1?
No, I don't think so.
Anyways.
Here's the question, so you want your U1 to be globally defined?
Just locally, so the composition of U1 at global, you don't have to say this is a local definition. But doesn't that mean that if you start traveling in this direction, you never get back to where you started, so?
Oh, I see what you're saying.
How can you do that unless you have?
Sorry, I see what you're saying. Sorry, if the U1 is an R and not a compact, if it has non-compact orbit, then you necessarily have another U1, yeah. But I don't think that's, at the moment, that's not helpful because we don't know enough about the global property. I mean, in the case when that U1 is not globally defined, then you're right, that four-dimensional space would necessarily have to have another Killing vector. But the first case, the most simple case you might consider is when the U1 is globally defined as closed orbits, and then your four-dimensional space is the determinization of K-R Einstein.
How can the U1 not have closed
orbits? How can it have not closed orbits? If it wraps around a torus, irrationally pitched.
Mm-hmm.
So it fills up the torus.
Yeah, but is it then so U1?
No, so it's an R.
Yeah, so is that the better?
I see. Yeah, but there's a local, there's an isometry with no closed orbits. But
yes,
if the R charges are irrational, that means as Ken.
If they're irrational, then you necessarily would have to have another. Exactly. So the generic story, presumably, is that you have additional Killing vectors in these geometries, just like the general Sasaki-Einstein case is that you have additional.
Maybe the next value is analogous to the quasi-rational case. We don't have the addition we want, but we don't have the rational.
Yeah. I guess we just have so few examples with these fluxes to know. We know from your work, for example, that there's not a lot of deformations of these conformal field theories. And the beta deformations, we already know those solutions. But there's a few outstanding cases, like the n equals 4 extra deformations of n equals 4. So maybe there's just a few extra solutions and that's it. But maybe it's a very rich class. So I have no intuition about which irregular, quasi-regular, or the regular cases are the more.